This is Mike Dolce.
Ian McCall.
James Little Evil Pulver.
The Crippler Chris Levin.
Frank the Legend Shamrock.
Bruce Buffer, your voice of the UFC Octagon. And now, we are live at Talking Balls.
We are back to Talking Brawls, Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. Your host, as always, Niall McGrath. With me, as usual, Mark Moriarty. Mark, how are you keeping? How was the weekend?
Oh, it was pretty good, no? It was pretty good.
Sober one.
Pretty good, yeah. Pretty sober. Yeah.
Just like myself. Yeah. All right, guys. Obviously, a fantastic weekend of fighting at UFC 160 in Las Vegas, Nevada. Cain Velasquez, surprise, surprise, went home with his heavyweight crown, defeating Antonio Silva, obviously, in the first round. We'll talk a little bit about that later on. And obviously, TJ Grant, who we chatted to a couple of weeks ago on the show, came away with the victory against Gray Maynard to solidify his number one contender spot in the lightweight division. Okay, guys, on the show today, obviously, we'll just give you a taste of what's to come. Obviously, with a massive card here in Dublin this weekend, a Cage Warriors 55 in the Helix, the sold-out Helix, might I add, Mark, this weekend. Carl Pendert obviously goes up in the main event against Che Mills for the welterweight world title in Cage Warriors. So a really, really big week lined up here. And we caught up with the champion, Carl Pendert, as he aims to defend his belt for the very first time. Also on the show today, we have another friend of the show, Paul Redzer Redmond, who goes up against Mark Allen this weekend, also at Cage Warriors 55 in the Helix in Dublin. So we'll be playing those interviews later on. So we're going to kick it off today. Obviously, there's a huge Cage Warriors feel to it, but obviously we have to review what went on last weekend at UFC 160. Okay, Mark, we'll obviously start with the prelim card. Good win for Jeremy Stephens, obviously bouncing back from that loss to Yves Edwards. When was that fight? That fight was on quite a while back in December, so
it was about three cards. Was it four cards? Oh, it was December, was
it? Yeah, it was December. Jeez. Yeah, a long time ago.
Payan was. Well, I can't score it any differently. Payan was pretty much a bloody mess at the end of that. It was pretty messy stuff. But no, Jeremy Stephens deserved. I thought he deserved the fight. That's the fight, the win he needed.
And probably a bit of an upset in the Brian Bells. George Roop taking in Brian Bells. Didn't see that one coming.
Yeah, I didn't entirely, but I think Brian Bells was sort of found out there. Yeah, left wanting. Yeah, no, I can't say I was too shocked I got my pick wrong, and I thought Bowles was going to win, but
it's a big surprising fight. Obviously, you know, Bowles is a WEC veteran, and you know he's fought guys like Uriah Faber and Roop, so interesting stuff in the world of UFC this weekend. Obviously, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson won again, and he's on some roll, Mark, isn't he?
Yeah.
Obviously he lost to Matt Brown, but you know it's what, 8-1 now, 7-1 is his record, so you know He's bounced back well. I think that's what the UFC often look for, is for guys if they lose the one fight and they're being talked up a lot and they bounce back well.
Yeah, you just don't feed them to Matt Brown.
The whole thing. Who beats Matt Brown anymore?
Exactly. You don't put a good kickboxer like Stephen Wonderboy Thompson in against him, you know, because you're going to be brawled and fought to the smithereens. But
you can see he's a good all round fighter. You know, you can see how that he's evolved as a mixed martial artist, and it was a good win against Sean Burrell.
And he's got a lot of tricks in the bag as well.
He does. He's a great fighter, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. I think see a lot from him in the future. Well, okay, let's get to the prelim card. And you know, we really were looking forward to this prelim card. Before, and we obviously talked to Damon Martin last week on the show, and we were really excited about a few of the fights, and I think we were, it's fair enough to say we were right with especially with Robert Whittaker. What a performance. We'll talk about that in a second.
Do you think we can not mention judging for this?
Yeah, well, you know,
we'll try. Okay.
We will. There was obviously, you know, judging decisions, you know, we're big cynics of the judges here. And you know, incredible decisions later on in the car. But Khabib Nurmagomedov, what a performance!
Clinic.
I know he did weigh in overweight on the Friday evening. He was 3.5 pounds overweight, which is, you know, it's not respectful to your opponent, Trujillo. Obviously, the weight cut's one of the most difficult things. But he did give away three quarters of his purse or whatever it was. So you know, incredible. What did Dennis White say in the post fight press conference? He got taught a lesson, or a bad lessoner in it was quite disrespectful what Tainan said about Nurmagomedov.
I just think it's a real sign of disrespect when you just like, and I thought the way
a badass clinic or something like that.
But the thing is, when he went over, he really angered me in the way in when he was like, when you're 3.5 pounds over and then you go over and you're wearing the stupid hat and you push Abel, you push him and start kind of almost headbutt him. It just showed disrespect at the same time when you're not actually going through the same pains to make the weight as the other fighter. I don't know if he just lost it midweek, and I'm sure, I know weight cuts one of the hardest things you can do, and it's part of the fight.
As you mentioned there, it's part of the whole build up to the fight, and I believe it was incredibly disrespectful for Nurmagomedov to come in with the, we know he always does that with the wig, but to be as disrespectful as he did at the weigh-in and to miss weight, it's just not on.
To give the same props for such a fantastic performance like that he put on. I find it hard to give the same props. It's kind of like when you have Belfort and you have the TRT issue when you do perform a spinning kick like that against Luke. It's one of those things that it tarnishes the victory for me, and like, no, it was an amazing victory, he put on a fantastic performance, but just when you're 3.5 pounds over in the weigh-in, it just wrecks it for me a bit.
It's just the disrespect that he showed towards Trujillo in the weigh-ins was annoyed. That's why I got sort of riled, but you know, great win all the same. And there was mention of Pat Healy possibly taking on Nurmagomedov in his next.
Well, wouldn't be surprised, because that's the thing, that like Pat Healy, the win's been ruled in no contest, but the thing is that I don't think, I think when Silva's making his bookings, I still think he has the same view as the fans, that he books with how things went down in mind, and I still think it's going to go down in the books as a no contest, but I think in reality it's going to go down as still a win for Pat Healy.
Of course, yeah, you'll have
so
to.
That's a good opponent for him, I suppose, but I must say, like, we've been both going mad all day. Robert Whittaker, what a performance.
Fantastic. We mentioned it last week, and
he's a stud.
We talked to Damon, and we've talked about this guy a long time, and we actually tried to get him on the show last week beforehand, and it just didn't work out for some reason or other. So hopefully we'll have him on soon enough for you guys. But this guy, you know, he's going to be a real force to be reckoned with, I think, in the welterweight division. That was just, you know, he took one or two possible decent shots off Colton Smith, but if you saw Colton Smith's face in the third round, he was very comfortable.
Every time Colton went in, he was getting hit worse on the flyback. Like,
there's a reason why this guy is has been training up in TriStar Gym. Everyone gets invited up there, and I think he's only 22 years of age as well. And we saw how good Colton was in the Ultimate Fighter.
But that was a different fighter. That's the thing. He's done that classic thing that wrestlers do, that he's all of a sudden gone in and got a top striking coach and ditched his wrestling. He had the perfect game plan to grapple and put on a boring display against Whittaker, and he didn't even properly go for the takedowns. He thought that his striking, it's kind of like a female tennis players, you know, the way it's really loud, but it's just not effective. It's not getting, because you see that Whittaker is not, he's not doing as much, he's not working as hard, he's not dancing as much as Colton was doing. But every time Colton went in, Whittaker would get the better fucking strike. It was really, really impressive, and he has such a weird stance with his left hand high and his right hand low. He's a different stance, and he's a different type of striker to what a lot of guys are used to.
Now this guy's a stud. Yeah, this guy's, you know, a powerful guy, and he beat a tough guy in the Ultimate Fighter Smashes final in Brad Scott, who we've talked on the show before, former Cage Warrior as well.
Was fight of the night.
Obviously, that was an incredible fight. Yeah. You know,
Forrest Griffin on her too.
It was that sort of esque fight. But this guy, I'm really looking forward to see what this guy does in the future, and see possibly where they put him next. I'm not sure, you know, obviously they're going to, I'd say, try and work with him and build him up slowly, not push him too fast.
Was Colton favourite going into that, just through a US bias?
Of course he would be.
You want your own tough champion to be the favourite, and I suppose not a lot of the Americans had seen that series of tough.
Yeah, smash. Colton's face was a mess. Colton didn't know where he was, and people gave, I think, I don't know who was reffing that, was it Yamasaki did that fight?
I'm not entirely sure, I can't remember now.
I think it was, didn't have a great night really from a lot of people's eyes, but you know, Colton didn't really know where he was, his face was busted up, and Whittaker, you know, great finish. And this guy, look out for him in the future, because this guy is going to be one of the top contenders in years to come. The guy's 22 years of age, so hopefully we'll talk to him in a couple of weeks as well. So fingers crossed. Obviously, Dennis Bermudez, a friend of ours as well, defeated Max Holloway. Mark, I scored this.
Everyone judged this differently.
I know. I scored this fight just like, I mean, by a splinter, I scored this 2-1 for Bermudez.
Did you?
Just, like, literally. I can see why it goes either way. It's one of those ones. But a lot of people did score it Holloway's way. But I don't know. I just think Dennis landed more, looked a little bit more defiant on his feet than Holloway. He seemed to get through. Holloway never looked really hurt Bermudez. I know he had him on his ass a couple of times, but he just didn't seem to. He never looked in trouble, really.
It was kind of Benson Henderson syndrome, you know, kind of where if you win round three and finish the round strongly, you could well have the fight in the bag with the judges. The judges do hand in each round individually, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, because this is the thing that I was baffled by, because I didn't get it. I thought Max Holloway should have won, but I kind of wanted Dennis to do. But Dennis is just, I think Dennis Bermudez could go down as the best third round fighter out there. He's a comeback king. He really is.
Because the first was clearly Holloway's.
Yeah.
The first Holloway's round.
The first was definitely Holloway's.
Second was. You know, it's one of those.
Second Bermudez's corner, we're saying to him, it's 1-1 now. But I really didn't think it was. I still thought you could have went either way on it.
It is a tough, yeah.
Because Holloway's range is insane. Like, and I thought that Dennis actually, it was a tricky fight for Dennis, because Dennis needed to get inside that range, and he found it pretty tricky at first.
Yeah.
Because, like, Max Holloway is basically, he's one of those Hawaiian dudes who's just built for this sport.
He has beautiful range. Beautiful range.
And he just knows how to keep people on the outside, and he knows how to put on exciting fights.
Well, it's not going to deter his stature in the UFC rankings, because they know he's one of the, you know, the up and coming young guys in the featherweight division, so let's see what happens. It's two good fighters, but yeah, listen, Mark, it could have
been, there's no loser in a fight like that.
Could have been scored either way. They're both young studs, as we like to.
Yeah, and I think as well, it's one of those things as well where I think people are waiting to be pissed off about the judges in these situations. Yeah. And fair enough, I judge it the other way, but I kind of wanted Dennis Bermudez to win kind of in that way, because I see where he's going career wise, and I think that Max Holloway could absorb the loss a little bit better. But I judge it the other way. You judge it the same way.
So, by the skin of my teeth, it could have been a draw. Like, you know, I can see why it was scored that way. But unfortunate for Max Holloway, really, at the end of the day. But I don't think it's going to affect two of these guys' careers too much, because they're, you know, both young guys, and I'm sure we'll see a lot from them in the future. Okay, moving on to Mike Pyle, big story. I had a problem with this decision. I did, as much as, you know, you like to see Mike Pyle get to that, you know, sort of get up to that upper echelon level of the gatekeeper type.
Yeah.
It just seems as though, you know, this performance, I know it's gone down as a win, but surely Rick Story took that fight. And, you know, as Dana said, I think the post-fight press conference in the media scrum, that, you know, Mike Pyle gets to these situations the whole time and he never really performs when it really, really matters for him to be noticed as a top sort of five guy. Mark,
he didn't look like he thought he won either, you know, kind of even in the post fight presser, he was kind of asked about, was he pissed off about it, and he was talking about not getting the finish. You could see in his eyes he didn't really believe that he'd done enough.
Yeah, but, no, I completely agree. He didn't fight well. Story, you know,
he's had a story written for him now.
They'll keep Story around for,
do you think so? Yeah.
He's good enough fighter to be kept around.
The narrative beforehand was that,
yeah, there was a little bit of talk, but, you know, who's he lost in his last four? Damian Maia, and he's won his other two, so it's not too bad. It was the Martin Kampmann and Charlie Brenneman back-to-backs that really sort of put a falter on his career, because it was quite good up to then, the amount of wins he's had. It's only the last sort of, what, last one, two, three, four, five, six fights that, you know, he's lost four of his last six, so, you know, he's good enough to hang around for a while.
Bigger guys have done worse than that, or better than that, and still been cut.
No, but I think the fact of the situation, Dana was admitting that Rick should have won that fight.
Okay,
possibly why they'll give him another chance, and I think he will stay around. But Mike Pyle, who's next for Mike?
I've absolutely no idea. Do you know, he's one of those guys that I don't see the his placement. Or you know, there's nothing written there. And,
but I just don't think he delivered. I don't know what happened. I just don't think he fought as well as he could. Because we saw him, obviously, in the Ultimate Fighter 16 finale against James Head with that, you know, fantastic finish in the first round.
Yeah.
Where his stand-up looks so, so, you know, good and impressive and strong. So it's just a matter, you know. This guy is, you know, obviously he used to work with Team Couture. I don't think he's there anymore. He parted ways. But, you know, he is one of these guys. I just maybe think it's a mental lapse.
He's in a lull. He's in a career lull.
Well, not a career lull. He's won his last five
fights. No, I know, but he's in that kind of place where he doesn't know where he's meant to be, you know? Kind of
possibly in a bit of limbo, but it's just, I think, about making that transition to the next level, and he's let himself down again a little bit. But listen, fingers crossed for Poyle, because he seems like a decent guy as well, and best of luck to him in the future. Obviously, okay, moving on to the main card, Marky. Donald Cowboy Cerrone and KJ Nunes. Is that KJ Nunes' packing orders? Donald's out-kickboxed him completely on his feet.
We said it last week.
It was going to happen. KJ absorbed an awful lot of punishment. Some nasty elbows in the ground. And paid for
I thought Donald should have finished it still.
Cowboy. I do think Donald should have finished it. I agree with you. But he had numerous lacerations on his face, KJ Nunes. And it was one of these fights where, you know, is the writing on the wall for KJ Nunes? Is he going to be able to hang around in the UFC for much longer, Mark?
You can give him. He probably has a few fights on the contract being brought over, and he might be that guy who jumps in on late replacement.
But I think that's
if he can do the kind of fill in for someone on a week's notice, maybe.
I think that's, since Zuffa bought Strikeforce, I think that's three losses in the bounce.
Sure.
So I think that could spell curtains for KJ. You know, KJ's a good fighter. You know, he's all round a decent fighter, but there's no real sort of standout area where he excels in. This is you need to have in mixed martial arts these days. Especially one area, you need to be well, you know, versed everywhere.
Yeah.
But he's very passive, as I mentioned last week. He's a passive sort of fighter. Let's too much go on, I think, without really asserting himself in the situation, or, you know,
he
really
lets other people
forward.
Dictate the way the fight's going to go. And when, like, Donald Cerrone, like, this is his job at the moment, that he is that guy, that he's the tester, the gatekeeper in that division, really, and he does it incredibly well. Like, if Donald would show a bit, if Donald would show a bit more choice in picking his opponents, and he could be higher up there and close to a Benson fight.
I couldn't have said it any better. I completely think you're right. I think he fights too much.
Yeah.
In a year, he just wants to fight the whole time.
Because people want to see him.
I think you need, what you need to do in a situation like, you know, obviously he bounced back very well. Obviously he was lost to Nate Diaz and Melvin Guillard. He beat before that. He bounced back very well at all times. But I think you sometimes just need to take a little bit of a time out and just have a little look around and go, instead of taking two more fights in a year, let's work something, you know, really hard on one specific area, get a bigger fight.
Yeah.
Instead of taking four or five fights in a year, and, you know, you're probably burning yourself out to a certain extent.
The people who are at the top are the people we often complain about and moan about, the fact that, like, Anderson's looking for the right fight and he's choosing his opponents and stuff. But these are the guys who are at the top, and they're at the top. John Jones does the same. He picks the fights which are going to bring in the most money. He treats it as a business. And Donald Cerrone likes to fight, and he's got a character which the fans want to see. And he has that problem, because that's one of the reasons that the fans love him so much, that he has that character. Like, there was an amazing photo before where he had Mike Tyson pretending to bite his ear trying to cut those last few pounds. It was one of those things that, like, that's Donald Cerrone, and I suppose he that's a career in the UFC. It's
definitely,
it's gatekeepers.
It is. You have to admire the fact that he'll fight anyone that's thrown on him. He'll fight. He obviously lost to Pettis, he beat KJ last time out, then he beat Gaillard, Jeremy Stevens, and the Nate Diaz fight. He's lost to the guys that are, you know,
you expect him to
the top 3-4 guys.
That division, any other division, like that division is just crazy.
But I really like the fight that was mentioned now this week. You might have seen on Twitter that I posted this talk of Josh Thompson versus Donald Cerrone.
That's good.
I think that's a really good fight. Both guys, obviously, you know, Thompson's coming off a great win against Josh Koscheck.
Yeah.
So that's one I really like. I really do like that fight.
Where's Donald Cerrone in the division? Because Josh Thompson, obviously we're going to be moving on to TJ Grant, Gray Maynard in a second, but there was a lot of talk that if TJ didn't put in a performance of style, that Josh Thompson would have been getting the title shot. I suppose the thing is that even this weekend, we'll talk about it later, but Forrest Griffin coming out and making a retirement speech in the post-fight presser, saying that the company couldn't rely on him. And that's the thing, that the UFC and Dana White and Joe Silva, they need to be able to rely on you as a fighter, and they have to be able to know that once you're put up on that billboard, that, you know, for a title fight.
So you're saying they can't rely on Josh Thompson to stay healthy, is that?
I don't think Strikeforce could.
Yeah, well, that's true. It's
so I think it's
fair
to say he's older now, so,
he is older, but possibly not a title shot yet, not for me. Obviously, TJ Grant's going to get that title shot now. Really impressive style. And you know, I didn't pick him here on the show last week, but I did actually.
It's awful, isn't it, when we were all positive the week before, and then all of a sudden, yeah, I know you did the flip-flop.
I did the flip-flop. I was on Damon Martin's show. Damon had me on. It was very nice of Damon to have me on The Great Debate last Wednesday, I think it was, and I actually changed my mind. I did a bit of research overnight. I was looking at fights, and I saw the way... I think Healy and TJ Grant are very similar in some ways, but I know it didn't go.
I think it's
like
always
that,
nice to have made two picks so as you have it kind of a little safety one way, you know. You didn't go for Junior DeSantis as well.
No, I did. I just kept on to you with that. But okay, moving on. Yeah, obviously, you know, it would be great to see that fight, and let's hope something happens. And you know, I'd like to see KJ stay around, but I think his time's run out. I have to say. Okay, TJ Grant and Gray, we'll obviously move on to it. Fantastic win for TJ Grant. You know, absolutely cleaved the head off Gray Maynard. You know, knees, punches. Gray,
think stopped too late?
Nothing was fine. He gave a guy, an experienced guy like Gray Maynard, who's been in title fights before, every chance to hang in there. And I think that's what you have to do with the more experienced guys. I think TJ, as I mentioned last week on with Damon, I think after properly analysing the fight on the Wednesday night, I mentioned that I thought Gray would charge in, and TJ, you know, goes forward as well. But I think TJ's, you know, power, and Gray was... I thought Gray underestimated him in the fight, and that clearly was the case. So you know, it was really, really good performance from TJ Grant. I couldn't happen to a nicer guy, and I do believe that you know, good things happen to good people, and I'm delighted for TJ, because it was the fight I wanted to see, and I think he's more capable of beating Benson Henderson than Gray Maynard would have been as well. So I think we actually have a better fight as an MMA fan, because he's going to, you know, implement his wrestling and big power against a guy like Benson Henderson, where I think that will be the part where Benson will come undone, is by, you know, a wrestler, a grinder, a fighter like Pat Bam Bam Healy, which, you know, TJ is very similar to in some ways, and they both have lovely beards as well, by the way. But it's just where I see, you know, I see we're getting value for that fight. I could see, you know, I could see.
Do you think Toronto?
No, I reckon it's going to be the UFC on Fox Sports one card. That's the word at the moment. It's going to headline the Fox Sports
Where's
one card.
Where's that?
In Boston.
Boston? Really?
Okay. There's talk of it.
Do you think that Benson... Because Benson...
That's what they love them on the Fox
Sports. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I suppose Benson Henderson's been proved not to be... He's not a pay-per-view draw as such yet. But I just would have thought that they would have wanted... Because those Canadian fans being so rapid... I always think the Canadian fans, they're channeled their nationalism in UFC. They always like to see a kind of a top Canadian talents doing well. I could see that happening, though. I suppose they haven't got... How deep is that card now? They're still getting those Fox cards together, really.
Connor's to come on it yet. He's an opponent, we believe. There's a problem with the opponents humming and hawing about signing the contract. Connor's obviously scheduled to be on the card.
Yeah.
Then we have Alistair Overeem and Travis Brown, Joe Lozon and Michael Johnson, which I really like that fight, actually. Then we've Thiago Alves and Matt Brown, which, you know, go on to Matt Brown. loving those few fights, but they do need something to bulk that up, because we can't rely on Overeem, especially after his last fight as well. So I think that will be the logical option, to have TJ Grant and Benson Henderson on that card.
Yeah, well,
expect a new champion, guys. I'm saying that right here now.
Well, no, I suppose. Yeah, well, I think it's hopeful. I want the same, but in the same way that I said before this Bigfoot Silva fight, I'm not writing off Benson Henderson yet.
I'll tell you why to look. Like, you haven't seen an opponent we haven't seen an opponent against Benson Henderson that is going to be as big as TJ Grant. TJ Grant has looked like an animal since he dropped down to lightweight. Look how, like, he completely smashed up a guy like Gray Maynard. You know, Gray Maynard's a big lightweight as well. He's not a small lightweight. I think the fact he's, you know, he's so tall, rangy, long, he's every tool. He's a good boxer, obviously, clearly, as we saw. He's been working his whole game. He's a very good wrestler. He's good with the ground and pound. He's every tool possible, and plus the power and the size. He's not going to be outsized by Benson Henderson, and I think that's going to be a massive favour for him in this fight, that he's going to be able to cope with the physical presence of Benson Henderson, where so many haven't in the past, and a few judging decisions as well.
I suppose I just desperately don't want to look at it yet till it gets closer. But looking back at this fight, I just thought Gray Maynard, he went for the kill early. He tried to he tried to go for the kill. He didn't get it, and you could see TJ just picking his spots. Yeah. So great, it was graceful. Actually, he was standing
TJ
on the outside.
With one left hook, and it rocked him a little bit. But then it just seemed it was a wake up call.
And we had that kind of slightly, it happens every so often when you have Joe Rogan and Goldberg. They were doing that thing that they were kind of. I think Kenny Florian's awful at it, where Kenny Florian, you can hear the bias in the fight every time in which way, and I think Joe Rogan's usually okay at it, but I think that he thought that the bully was going to get this one, and he was implying almost that TJ was kind of standing on the outside and was almost scared, because he, like, in fairness, Gray did clip him a few times in the opening.
He did, yeah, in the opening exchanges. But Gray, I thought it was. I thought he showed arrogance, pressed forward too often. Thought he was going to absolutely own him, and that was not the case.
I didn't think TJ had that power. I don't think a lot of people did jump on him that way. That just
proves
that he can step up the pace, though.
That he does have the all round game, especially since dropping in, and he does have the power, and he does. He's a big lightweight since dropping down from welter, and he does have the power, and he can. He's really made a statement. That's four on the bounce now since moving, and he deserves his title shot. And I hope we have a new champion, because it'd be good to mix up a few of the divisions.
Unfortunately, to make a proper statement for Benson Henderson, what you have to do is win a kind of really eke out a really controversial decision. Yeah. But then you wouldn't have got the title fight, and it would have gone to someone else. But
best of luck. I'm looking forward to that fight. And okay, Glover. We'll wrap up that now. Glover, James Tahuna. We called it last week. Early finish statement made from Glover Teixeira.
Textbook.
That's what he needed to do. We saw how good his ground game is, and we saw he's a Mike Tyson fan. Clearly,
is he? Yeah. Is he? Apparently, that was more important than the fight. But
yeah, I can't see that. But I think it really does show where James Tahuna was at as well. We mentioned it last week. He's not going to be able to hold his own, I don't think, in that upper echelon of the light heavyweight division. And I think Glover has a very good chance now. It's either going to be him or Alexander Gustafsson to get a shot at that belt. Really looking forward to that. Glover is a beast, and I think he's solidified that. He's shown a little bit of everything in his four UFC fights, and it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in the light heavyweight picture. Who would you like to see Mark get the title shot? Sorry, I just burped there.
It's okay. Glover, that was the most textbook performance from Glover. It went exactly as everyone under the sun was saying first round. So,
yeah, beautiful guillotine choke, Mark. He got serious torque on the ground, and proved yet again to why he should be up in that top 2-3 in the division.
Yeah, they're slow building him. They're giving him a route there. It's pretty exciting to see where he's going. He's been very impressive thus far. I think James Tahuna isn't the launch pad to a straight title fight, obviously. I don't know where he is in the rankings, because I pay very little attention to them unless they're ridiculous. But I think someone like Gustafsson could make sense. I'm not entirely sure.
It's either going to be him or Gustafsson get the shot, so whether they put those two together for a title eliminator is going to be interesting. But I think possibly Gustafsson might have the slight edge at the moment. Obviously, he didn't fight, in the main event in Sweden because of the injury.
Yeah,
but they've Machida ranked at number one. Who wants to see Machida? Who wants to see Machida Jones again?
How in God's name? That's the only reason I even paid any attention when I saw that Dan Henderson and Machida are like number one and two in the rankings. It's just kind of
Glover's four. I'm just checked here.
Number four. Okay, well that's so. And is Gustafsson three?
Gustafsson is
it's probably someone ridiculous. Three is there?
Two. Leona Machida one. Hendo's three.
Hendo's three. Okay,
that's probably fair enough after his run, but we'll see what happens. It's going to be interesting. It has to be Teixeira or Gustafsson in my eyes to get the next title shot.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they. But I suppose they want to see. I've always thought they wanted to have that Gustafsson John Jones fight, so I thought they might actually just give it to Gustafsson and then save Glover for after.
Well, Henderson Evans is obviously going to be an interesting eliminator as well, and we have that at 161. I believe,
and I suppose technically a Rashad Evans fight with John Jones might even make money down the line. Even if he's down in the rankings and all that.
Rashad Evans isn't going to get a title shot if he wins against Henderson, because of his last two fights were horrific. Against Jones, and then
you were very down on the last one.
I was. Yeah, it was a flat performance against Nog, and I can't see.
I think that was just a flat fight all round as well.
It was the worst fight I've ever seen in my life. Nothing happened to him. Yeah. And I just think, he's a lot of soul searching to do at the moment. I know he's had a lot of problems on you know, outside the octagon as well, which would, could be playing. So let's hope we get a better performance from Rashad next week. And you know, if Dan does win, Dan throws himself right back in the mix again to get a title shot.
I wouldn't be surprised, quite frankly, Niall, if they actually gave Glover someone a little bit further down in the rankings, and then just said he was number one contender after the Gustafsson fight, after Gustafsson's got his hands on John Jones, because I just think they see him, they've been doing the slow burn with him, and I think that Gustafsson's a fight they can sell on the whole concept of range versus range, and they want that too much. Kind of, they want the European guy in there.
No, yeah, I think so. And they've
Swedish, you know, Sweden's a good market.
Sweden, and yeah, we'll talk about Reza Madadi later on, but that's for a different different time. Obviously, moving on to the co-main event of the evening, JDS against Mark Hunt. What a finish.
Puncher's chance now. Puncher's chance.
Well, he did. He nearly took
his
head off.
He did have a puncher's chance.
He gave him that beautiful... I nearly fell off my chair here again.
watch your toe now.
No, obviously, you know, Mark did. He clipped him with that left hook at one stage, and he was rocked a couple of times. But obviously, you know, JDS was in control of the fight. You got to give props to Mark Hunt. He never, ever gives up. And, you know, this guy... We'll fight to the very, very end. And that's what he did. You know, he was 30 seconds away from going to decision. That would have been a massive upset by itself.
That blow he swallowed in the first round.
Awesome.
He just took it and just... Yeah. You know, he if you're going to say one thing about Mark Hunt...
Covers.
He has a chin.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know that.
He has a chin.
One of the toughest dudes around. And, you know, we've had Mark on the show, and he's a great guy as well. Yeah. Blunt guy. He says it how it is. One of the more honest guys around. But, you know, you have to respect that. And you know, Mark made no excuse after the fight. He said, thanks to everyone, you know. Yeah. It wasn't my night. It wasn't. You know, Mark will be back. Mark's easily good enough to hang. And I think he proved a point to a lot of people. Because a lot of people said this fight wouldn't go more than one round. JDS had not come out. And Mark Hunt, man. Mark Hunt is... You don't become a K-1 Grand Prix world champion for nothing. And I think people disrespected that. And I was quite disappointed with a lot of people and their take of Mark Hunt. And you know, he was 30 seconds away from going to decision. A lot of people did not expect that in their wildest dreams. Mark Hunt would hang in with JDS for three rounds. And he's definitely one of the top five guys now. They have to move him up in the rankings.
No, I think I don't blame people for... I don't think anyone really counted him out. I think everyone knew he had a puncher's chance. Yeah. Because when you can hit as hard as Mark Hunt... I thought JDS, when he was asked what was the difference between being hit in the face by Cain Velasquez and Mark Hunt, and he said, Mark Hunt hits a lot harder.
A lot harder.
and I think that's quite clear to see. Yeah. And he wanted that. You could see him. He didn't go for the walk-away knockout again, but...
he made sure he finished it as well, JDS. Once that spinning, that beautiful spinning...
When you have to go... When you have JDS going for a spinning heel kick...
Yeah.
And saying that the hands aren't enough, that's insane.
Yeah, you have to put away someone. And you know, he did. He took no risks with the follow-up punch. That was a nasty punch, the bottom of the chin there. Where does Junior go from here? It looks like they're going to put on the trilogy fight. Some people think it's too soon. It possibly is. I'd like to see it, because I think these guys are young enough and good enough to fight three or four or five more times probably in our lifetime. I could see these guys having five fights by the end of their careers against each other. But Mark Hunt, I want to see Mark Hunt. I'll tell you where I was thinking about this today. You look at Overeem and Travis Brown.
Yeah.
The winner of that fight should face Mark Hunt. I think it's a really good stylistic matchup and a fun matchup as well.
I think he could eat either one of them. I think Overeem could be interesting, but I still think he's fought
the Ream before. He lost to the Ream, and then in Pride, I think it was.
It was Pride.
And he lost to him, but you know, Mark's a much better fighter. Well, no, that's actually a bad thing to say. No, he's not. He's a more mature fighter now, I'd probably say, but. You know, I'd love to see that fight again, Ream. Imagine that, Ream and Hunty putting one on Ream on the chin.
And I just think Mark, because you can sell pretty much whatever you want with Mark Hunt, because he's one of those guys. He's 39, but he fights with his strengths now. Like, you saw that fight; his toe was blown up in round one.
Yeah,
he couldn't move. He was pretty much waddling about in there with the toe. And I'm sure the excitement and the exterior in the heart will kind of keep the blood pumping, and the adrenaline will drive.
That's
you through
the word
to
you're
keep
looking for, Mark.
It was the word I was looking for. My thesaurus was aside, but I think that the adrenaline carried him so far. But when you saw it, It was disgusting. The toe was blown up. How can you move, and especially with a striker, with the movement of JDS, who moves so... He moves pretty effortlessly around there. Fluently. Yeah,
he's like a swan, like Zidane. He does, in fairness. And, you know, great combinations as well he hit him with during that. And Mark stayed in it till the bitter end. Obviously, he had to go for the finish in the third, and it wasn't a B. But, you know, it's going to be interesting now to see JDS and Kane 3. I'd say, when are we sort of looking around... probably 3-4 months, probably 5 months time, and it's going to be interesting to see.
But
as
December.
I've said this last week, Mark, as well, and I've said it for quite some time. Obviously, I, you know, predicted Kane to beat JDS last time out. I think we're in for, you know, a real stay of dominance, and I think the King is going to reign for quite some time, Kane Velasquez, and I do see him, you know, being a champion for possibly a couple of years. I can see a bit of longevity to this title reign yet.
Yeah, I think the story now that was put out in the pre-flight countdown show was that the last time JDS had trained too hard, and he was told after he went to the hospital post-fight that he'd put too much energy into the fight and he'd crossed the line and pushed his body too far. I know there's an excuse every time a fight goes wrong, but the thing is that technically they managed to sell us on Antonio Bigfoot Silva versus Cain Velasquez.
They didn't sell me.
No, but the thing is that they managed to do a countdown show without showing any reference to the last fight. Because if you show what Bigfoot Silva looked like on the ground in a heap
of
blood,
it wasn't mentioned once.
Yeah, if you show that to anyone, you're not buying UFC 160.
I did mention that. I mentioned that point on the show last week as well. That, you know, we saw a lot of interviews with Antonio Bigfoot Silva, and any interview he was on as well, that, you know, the pre-fight press conference, he did not mention the first fight once. I thought the psychological fact played a huge factor, and I mentioned this last week as well, that remembering that first night and seeing a guy like Cain Velasquez, who made a bloody mess of him in the first fight, there had to be psychological pressures and fears in Antonio's mind.
Well, I suppose when we move on to that one now.
We've moved on to natural progression. But, you know, the way he turtled up, and he just, you know, it was just a sign of, you know, people were giving Yamasaki shit for stopping it.
That was because he let it one go. I know, exactly.
He was completely turtled up, and he made no effort to defend himself. What does he do? Dude. Does he stay there till he gets burst open again and get shit for it? Do you know
Absolutely.
What I mean?
Absolutely. You're dead. And I thought that Bigfoot Silva, speaking in the post-fight press conference, saying things like referees should be fined. Like, they say this in football as well. These guys aren't being paid a lot of money. They're getting their expenses paid around the world. There's only a few of them who are doing it at the top level. Yeah, of course, Dana White, we'd all love Herb Dean to be in every big fight.
Of course.
That's the dream situation for everyone, because we have respect for Herb and we've seen him make a lot of good decisions. But the thing is that these referees aren't being paid a lot of money. They're doing it because they love the sport as well. I know we give a lot of them a lot of bad contests, but the thing is, they wouldn't do it if they were being fined.
Yeah, of course. But the one thing I do want to see happen, I think, you know, we're too set in our ways with Yamazaki, Mazagadi, the same guys. Why don't they give the younger guys a shot that will be, you know, on the prelim card, and do a relegation promotion system if someone's not, you know, judging or, you know, refereeing fights the way they should. Like in the Premier League in football, the English Premier League and things like that, you get put down to the conference, or not the conference, probably the second division for a couple of weeks or something like that, and possibly rotate a little bit. Give these younger guys a shot that are becoming mixed martial arts referees. But listen, guys, we're not going to, you know, it was a straightforward win for Cain Velasquez. Obviously, we're going to see the JDS fight now soon. Antonio Silva, where does he go from here? Probably going to have another, you know, he's probably not going to get a title shot again while Cain Velasquez is champion. And I think Cain's going to be champion for quite some time. So I think he's just going to have to, you know,
fight
the likes of Travis Brown and Mark Hunt.
He's a big badass gatekeeper.
Why not Mark Hunt, Antonio Silva?
Yeah. That's a very good idea, actually.
Why not? That'd be a lovely fight. People obviously see Roy Nelson's fighting soon, so, you know, there's a lot of fights to make, guys. It's still interesting, but
Bigfoot Silva doesn't look bad as well. He looked in good nick coming into this one. Like, he looked physically fit. He's worked with Dolce in the past, which always bemused me, but he looked fitter than usual.
Mike feeding grapes. Feeding the Bigfoot grapes.
You don't see Bigfoot Silva on the Mike Dolce t-shirts. he did look good coming into this, and I think his sheer physical size and presence, kind of like Czech Congo in the heavyweight division, he looks like a scary badass. So it's always good that to new MMA fans, if you haven't seen him turtled up in a bloody mess under Cain Velasquez in the first time around, you kind of think, wow, this guy could definitely have a chance.
Yeah, he's had a very good, you know, career. I'm not saying he's going to retire or anything, but, you know, he's beaten some of the top guys. Obviously, Fedor. You know, the guy was he the first one to beat Fedor? He was, properly, Fedor. Then, you know, Travis Brown, Dareem, Mike Kyle, Andrei Arlovsky. You know, he's still completely relevant in the division, but probably not as a title contender. Okay, Mark, before we get to the first interview today with Kyle Pendred, what was your overall thoughts on the card? Enjoyable?
I thought it was good. I thought it was a top heavyweight card. And Cain Velasquez, like, this is the thing that when top heavyweight cards go down, you're often not going to get many shocks because the guys just hit heavy. And Cain Velasquez, a lot of his fights aren't going to be that entertaining because that's the way he's going to finish them.
But I think a lot of people are looking towards JDS, Hunt, and the rest of the card. And it was a really, really good, solid card all round.
It was
really
a win for the UFC.
Big time, definitely. Really good card. Really, really good card. Okay, let's get to the first interview of the day with Cage Warriors welterweight champion. Who was defending his title for the first time at Cage Warriors 55 this weekend against UFC vet Che Mills in the Helix in Dublin. We welcomed him back on the show for, what, the third or fourth time? Third time. So, guys, check out the interview and we'll be back to talk about Cage Warriors 55 this weekend. Check it.
Hi, this is UFC lightweight TJ Grant and you're listening to Talking Brawls.
Delighted to welcome back on the show Kyle Pendred, who goes up against Che Mills at Cage Warriors 55 this Saturday night in the Helix in Dublin. First of all, Kyle, I'd like to congratulate you because we haven't obviously spoken to you since you won the belt last time out. How are you keeping? How are things, mate?
Yeah, things are going great. Looking forward to Saturday now. Put in a serious amount of training. Haven't really stopped since before the last fight, so just looking forward to getting back in there again, doing my thing.
Kyle, last time we spoke to you, you were going into the Gael Garmo fight. You weren't under as much media scrutiny. Now you have the Late Late Show, the MMA era. The MMA world is kind of watching this fight to see what happens. Is there any extra pressure on you to keep your focus on your opponent?
Not at all. It's the same thing as always. I'm going to go out there Saturday night. There'll be one guy standing across the octagon from me, and that's... it's the same deal. It doesn't really matter who's watching or how many people are there. It could be two people in the arena or it could be 50,000. It makes no odds to me. And the only pressure I ever feel is the pressure I put on myself. And that's constant, so it's no different this time around.
Is it nice to be fighting in a hometown fight for your first title fight? And did you expect this to be taking place to defend your belt for Cage Warriors?
Yeah, it is nice. It's as anyone's seen, the Irish fans are crazy and they make themselves heard, so it's pretty cool, and it's nice not having to travel. The Helix is fairly local to me, so it's very handy. I'm looking forward to it.
And Kyle as well, obviously, since the last time we spoke to you, as Mark mentioned there, the media attention on you. How have you dealt with it? Do you enjoy doing it, or what's your situation? Because I heard you, obviously, you were on the MMA air on Monday, and then you were on MMA Junkie Radio there yesterday.
Yeah, I do actually enjoy it. When it comes to, the week before the fight or 2 weeks before the fight, and you're kind of doing them constantly, it gets a bit tedious because you get asked a lot of the same questions and stuff like that, I enjoy it. It's just a part of the game. It's something I got to get used to as well. It's only going to get, as my career progresses, I'm only going to get more media attention, so I'm just going to get used to it and get on with it.
Exactly. And moving on to the fight camp, how's everything gone in preparation for the fight down in SPG?
Yeah, it's quite amazing. I've put in a serious camp. There was a good few lads fighting on this card. Chris Fields has also got a fight coming up, so we've been training together. Philip Mulpeter was supposed to be fighting. His opponent was actually pulled out, but he was in training for a fight as well. So he was there putting in the rounds, and obviously Connor and a heap of other guys in there. So I was training hard and. The same as always, putting in serious amount of hours and leaving it all on the gym.
Yeah, we had Chris Fields on the show the other week, and he was saying that it's a bit odd because you guys are actually usually on separate cards, so you usually get to corner each other. Is it different to be kind of training together for this?
We're always kind of in the gym anyway. It depends. It doesn't really matter if he has a fight coming up or not. He's going to be in the gym training and the same with myself, so it doesn't really make a difference. The only thing is that he won't be in my corner, I won't be in his corner come fight night, but sure, we've he hasn't been in my corner for every fight, and the same as I haven't been in his corner for every fight. And I think we fought once before together on a Cage Warrior show. We both won, so nice keep that tradition going on Saturday.
Good stuff. And Carl, I saw that Andy Ryan was down from Team Rhino in SBG. Who have you been working with exactly in the build up to the fight?
All the SBG guys, and then Neil Seary and Redzer from Team Rhino have been over sparring with us as well. So, you know, we've had great rounds going in. We also had ex-UFC heavyweight Paul Buentello over doing rounds with us as well. So, you know, had an amazing training camp. It's been brilliant, and you know, I couldn't be any more well prepared for this fight.
Yeah, it must be good to train with guys like Redzer and Neil Seary as well. Obviously, you know, they're on the card, and Neil's fighting for the inaugural Cage Warriors flyweight title as well. Carl, how good is it to have, you know, spar with a little guy, the smaller guys, that, you know, their pace, and does that keep the cardio at bay and the speed, you know, up to pace?
Yeah, it definitely mixes things up, but I wouldn't spar too much with anyone kind of lighter than featherweight. Yeah, anyone below featherweight now would be kind of kept away from me. I can't break. You know, John doesn't want me breaking those lads. when I spar with lighter guys, it's definitely, it's always a higher pace kind of. I try not to use like my strength to try and be really technical as well. So it kind of, you know, helps me work my technique a bit more as well. And I was also, you get the other kind of end of the spectrum where I was saying we had Paul Buentello, who was a heavyweight over, and he was a big guy, and you know, that was a different kettle of fish, and I enjoyed it as well.
Carl, you've been quite open in saying how you want this to go and where you see yourself going after this. The UFC are suckers for a narrative and a story, and your story is quite clear. You left Boston at the age of 5. The Boston card is there. Connor's hopefully going to be on it as well. You want to get on that card. How do you see this going, and have you been quite open with Cage Warriors about where you want to go after this?
Yeah, I've been open with Cage Warriors from the start. I've been signed to Cage Warriors exclusively for the last 2 or 3 years, and the reason I did that was because Cage Warriors basically said to me they were a stepping stone into the UFC, to the bigger leagues, and that's what I wanted. I'm in this sport to be the best, you know, and to do that you have to be competing against the best, and they're all in the UFC, right? So, you know, they have no problems with that. That's exactly what they said they were out to do. So, you know, everyone's asking me about it, and I think people are getting the impression that I'm looking past this fight on Saturday. I've been eyeing up fighting for the UFC since I started, and for the last few fights I've always thought after my next fight I would be in. And so this is just the same as the last few fights. I have to do the business, and I reckon I'll get the call. So I'm not looking past this fight on Saturday. I'm completely focused, and I have to win, and that's what I'm going to do.
And Carl, obviously, you know, Shane Mills, a UFC veteran, who has fought some of the top guys in the welterweight division, the UFC, Rory McDonald, etc. Is this the toughest fight of your career?
Yeah, every fight is always the toughest fight of my career. That's the way I want my career going. I'm taking it up a step every time. I want to climb the ladder and you know, test myself. So every fight, as long as my career is going the way I want it to be, every fight is going to be the toughest fight I've ever had.
Connor and a lot of other fighters talk about how they visualise how things are going to go in the cage. Do you prepare for situations, and do you have a feeling of how you want things to go down on Saturday night?
Yeah, that's, you know, I train, you know, 3 or 4 hours a day, and then the rest of the time I usually spend thinking about the fights that I have coming up. So you go through everything, you go through the situations in the gym, and then when you leave the gym you're going through them in your head. So, you know, I'm thinking about every possible situation that could happen, good and bad, and how I'm going to react to it. You know, that's what visualization is about, and it's just preparing for those sort of situations, so when it comes about, you know what to do.
And with Shay, what way do you actually visualize the fight going yourself, and what way can you see it going on Saturday night, Carl?
I see myself taking him out. When in the first couple of rounds, I really think he's for me to take out, and I want to prove that I'm on a different level to him. So planning going in there, making a statement, and showing people that I don't want to go too much into detail on exactly what I'm going to do. But
yeah, and obviously your last three fights have gone to decision. Is that, you know, really important to you that you do make that statement? So, you know, you definitely will be in the UFC, you know, come August on that card in Boston.
Yeah. I always want to go in and try and take out the guy. Stylistically, my last couple of fights, I felt I've kind of had to be careful when it came to, you know, ground and pound and really commit myself to some things, because I was coming up against some high level grapplers. My last four opponents have been really high level grapplers, two black belts and two brown belts. So, you know, I didn't want to mess around too much on the ground, but, you know, different type of fight, and I think it suits me quite well. So I'm really looking forward to showing a style of fighting I haven't been able to show in a year or two, you know.
Yeah, people often talk about that, because when you're up against a grappler and someone who can submit you in those situations, the word careful comes up a lot. How do you create the balance in your head of when to take the chance, when you see how much is on the line, of not doing something too glamorous, going for the spinning kick or something stupid which could leave you open to offense?
Yeah, it's just really a feeling sort of thing, you know. You out there on the side of caution at times, you know, you see these guys who don't particularly care about being cautious sometimes, but those guys are generally the guys who, yeah, you know, someone like Leonard Garcia, who doesn't particularly win too many fights, you know. Yeah. You have to be smart about things as well, but at the same time, you have to take risks, and you know, you have to push it and try and take guys out. So it's just really, and you gotta use your own intuition there.
Cole, what's SBG like on a big fight week like this, when everyone's gearing up, trying to make weight? What's the atmosphere like?
Well, right now, I'll keep doing a bit of, you know, stretching, getting a few massages, and taking it easy, looking after my weight.
Do you feel that John's coping with the newfound celebrity of some of you guys? The top fighters in the gym now have come to prominence in even the Irish media scene now. Is the media glare hard to keep out of the gym?
Yeah, it was something that we had to kind of adjust to, and John had to adjust, because, you know, in the last few months, every day there's a call coming in about some sort of interview, whether it be TV, radio, podcasts, or magazines. Someone wants to do something, and, you know, when it first came about, and we thought it was great, and we were jumping at it all, but we can't actually do it all. You know, what got us here was training hard and staying focused on what we have to do. So, you know, John is starting to be a bit more vigilant with things, and not letting reporters and journalists into the gym every day, because there was at one point we had every training session there was someone there to talk to someone. So, like I said, we've had to adjust, and we're getting used to it, but we're coping now.
Yeah, Cole, I must congratulate you on, because I thought you and Conor dealt with the Late Late Show appearance really fantastically, because you dealt with the human cockfighting questions. you were prepared and ready for the layman's questions so well.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. Myself and Conor, we did prepare for we fight. We trained and we visualised it, and we kind of thought of what kind of situations or questions we might be asked, and thought about how we respond. So, because we thought it was really important. It was a big deal for Irish MMA, and we wanted to come across well for ourselves, for the gym, and for the sport. So, we took it really seriously, and we were delighted with how we did.
Yeah, you came across very well. You should be very proud of yourselves. Carl, also, obviously, before we wrap up the interview, you've this documentary out, the MTV documentary. Just tell our listeners a little bit about that.
Yeah, I had an MTV documentary, where they were basically filming me. They followed me around for 5 or 6 days, and it's by a filmmaker called Dan Marquez. He's a really good filmmaker, and it's just basically an insight into me, how I got into MMA, my training, and, you know, the sacrifices that are involved in being an MMA fighter.
Yeah, a lot like the one Conor did as well. I think it's the same guy, isn't it?
Dan Marquez, yeah.
That's right. So, Kyle, tell us, come August 17th, are you going to be on that UFC on Fox Sports card, one in Boston, in your hometown, the place you were born? Are you going to be on that card, mate?
100%. Well, when I first heard about that card, it was around September of last year, I said to myself, I'm going to be on that card. I set it as a goal for myself, and I always reach my goal. So, like I said, I'm not looking past this fight. I have to go out there and do my thing on Saturday, and that's exactly. I'm not thinking about August 17th right now. I'm thinking about June 1st, and I'm thinking about that fight. But that's the goal I set, and I will achieve that.
Listen, we really, really do appreciate the time as always, Kyle. And listen, best of luck from myself and Mark here in the studio. And
Do you have anything to plug? Any sponsors to plug, Kyle?
Just want to thank you, Vitacoco, Pride or Die, and my strength and conditioning coaches in the Irish Strength Institute, all the guys in the Straight Pass Gym.
Brilliant
thanks
stuff.
For the help.
Kyle, thanks a million for your time. And listen, we'll talk to you again, I'm sure, after when you'll be in the UFC in a successful title defence against Shane Mills. Thanks a million, mate.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Kyle.
Talk to you soon.
And that was Kyle Pendred, the Cage Warriors World Welterweight Champion. And big thanks to Kyle yet again for joining us on the show. It's obviously, tough week this week with the weight cuts and
tough to talk to media. Guys during the cut, isn't it? Yeah.
And all the media as well. Kyle's done a lot this week. The MMA Hour, the MMA Junkie yesterday, and ourselves today, and numerous magazines as well. So big thanks to Kyle. Guys, obviously, if you want to check us out, you can catch us on Twitter at Talking Brawls, at Mark Moriarty 101.
He's Niall McGrath 4.
Facebook, Talking Brawls, Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. And if you want to get in direct contact with us, swing us an email, talkingbrawls@gmail.com. Mark, big, big card this weekend for us guys here in Ireland.
Our bread and butter, so to speak.
Yeah. Big time, Kyle Pendred, Shay Mills. Kyle obviously getting into a lot of detail there about the fight and what's going to happen for Irish MMA in the coming months. It really is a big, big fight for Kyle. I don't think we can underestimate how important this fight is for his potential UFC career. It's a huge lineup as well. Obviously, Paul Redmond is facing Mark Allen. Another massive fight in the card is Neil Seary versus Mike Slaner for the inaugural Cage Warriors flyweight title.
You were saying it's the most Irish fighters on a... On a Cage Warriors card, this
I think
far,
it is.
It?
I think it is. It's up there anyway. You've obviously we know that maybe it isn't with Mo Peters' fight being pulled against Abby Jack. That was pulled off due to injury to Abby Jack. But there's a lot of guys. John Redmond as well. Paul Redmond. We've Chris, who we had on a few weeks ago, is fighting against Norman Parise. That's actually going to be called a catchweight, guys. Parise requested the. Obviously couldn't make his weight properly, so
Frenchman
tried to screw us and everything.
They're wine and cheese bastards.
So he's it's going to be 190. Interesting. I'm sure Chris is going to be angry about that, as he was very very angry.
He's a big dude who cuts a lot of weight,
and Chris has never, I don't think, weighed in out of weight, so that'll be very irritating for Chris. And he wasn't the fondest person of French. Check that out. That was 2 weeks ago, guys. You can check that episode. What, Mark? 23, was it?
24. Yeah, 23
or 4.
Yeah, 23 or 4.
We've done at this stage. But okay, let's talk about this fight. Mills, Pendred.
It's Kyle's biggest fight thus far. It's his biggest name thus far, anyway. That's what we'll all say. And it's someone who he's not going to be able to underestimate with his Muay Thai and his style. His style is going to be difficult to deal with. I think Kyle's going to have to play, and he talked a lot to us in the interview about using a lot of fighter's intelligence and picking his spots, when to go for the kill and not.
Yeah, no, completely agree with you. Obviously Che Mills as well, a UFC vet. What can we expect from Che? Because last time out, against Mills, I was over at the fight in London, and Riddle obviously beat him, was real in no contest. Shay, he had a lot of personal problems. His father passed away in that space. He had a severe, I think he actually tore one of his ligaments in his knee, and he'd a new kid. There was a lot of distractions for Che.
Yeah.
It was a very poor performance from Che. One of the judges scored that fight, I think 29-28, in his favour. That's probably the worst judging decision I've ever seen in my life, because Che was clearly out dominated by Matt Riddle in that fight. As I spoke to Dana about the post-fight press conference over there. But, Mills surely must be very disappointed with that performance and looking to bounce back, and I think this could be a barn burner of a fight, Mark.
Yeah, I still am slightly baffled by the fact that he actually continued with that fight and didn't out his problems leading up to it, because I think that people have been saved from being cut from the UFC for less, and I think that maybe if he hadn't taken the fight, what was it? It was a ligament injury in the knee,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, it's quite a severe ligament injury.
Dude, you don't go into a fight with that sort of stuff. When you're a Muay Thai fighter and your movement's impinged on by that like that, you can't go into the fight like that. And I think possibly he would have been given a fight sooner or later on a FX card or something like that and been able to win it and save his job.
But I think he's that kind of guy. He does seem to come across as a very humble dude, and you know,
if you're fighting in front of your hometown crowd as well,
exactly, his word seems to mean a lot. And you know, he does. Did you see the MTV documentary on him?
I haven't caught it yet.
The one Carl was talking about.
Yeah, I've seen the Carl one.
Dem's doing a few. He's done one, obviously. He's working with Cage Warriors with the documentaries for MTV. But I watched the Chain Mills one, and you know, he does. He comes across as a really, really nice guy, and I've never actually had the pleasure of meeting him. I saw him briefly at the press conference over there, but I've never actually spoken to him. But it's one of these situations where you might just think Che is a little too nice for Cahill to really implement, you know, how hungry Cahill is. We always get that with the guys from SP. They're all hungry guys. They really, really, they can see themselves being world champions. They've mentally really, really tough dudes. And I think this is where Cahill's going to win the fight. I think he's going to, you know, beat him in all departments of this fight. Probably, possibly take to the ground. I know he wants to make a statement, but I can possibly see Cahill finishing this on the deck with a ground and pound and out wrestle Che. Yeah. I know Che is very he likes to grapple a bit, but is more, you know, he prefers if fights do stay on their feet. Obviously, you know, that Edson Barbosa knockout, that's I think someone, you know, said to me the other day, that's one Che Mills will, you know, take to the grave with him. That unbelievable knockout that Barbosa inflicted on Mills.
If you ever forget who he is,
remember that.
Yeah, like I do think that Cahill's the better technician, and he's a much smarter fighter. And I think also the thing is that Che Mills is, I suppose he's a 30-year-old, but he's
been
not that
there,
old,
done
but
that.
He's been there. He's coming to the end of his story, whereas Cahill's just starting to write his and turn the pages. He has his goal. He knows he wants to be on that Boston card to return to the place of his birth. And he has the visa, which is always nice to the UFC, not having to pay for the visa issues already. You know, kind of he'll have that sorted. And I think when, I suppose just when you have your story kind of there on paper already, the only problem is, and of course Cahill was very clear with us, the fact that he's not overlooking Che. I think people have said it in the press that he could be. The main thing is just Cahill's focus going into this to not have the Boston card glaring in his head. It's something which always baffles me. I don't know how you block out all of that crap out of your head when you step in.
Definitely.
There it's pretty tricky to do, and if Cahill can do that, I think he should be able to take it and grind him down and take him down and have a stoppage by round two. That's what I'd be looking at.
I'd probably go a little bit later. I'm going to look at championship rounds. I'm going to go round four. I think he's going to do exactly as Mark said there. I think the huge factor in this fight is the psychological factor, and you know how much Cahill's going to want this. And as I said, Che's been there, done it in the UFC. I can see Che being back in the UFC one day, but I think it's Cahill's time at the moment to shine. We obviously saw his resilience against Bruno Carvalho. That was the fight before the title shot against Gael Grimaud, when he hung on in with that vicious, vicious choke that Carvalho had him in. I think it was about a minute and a half, 2 minutes towards the end of the fight, end of the third round.
I was scared.
And looked like, you know, he never looked like tapping, in fairness to him. And he hung in. It was so tight, that choke. And how Cahill, you know, he showed the resilience and he showed the spirit of a champion.
I'd love to have it in front of us now, because I always hear it from people that you have to keep talking to the ref in that situation to say you're okay, and to be able to inform the ref that you're not close.
Talking on the telephone.
Talking on the telephone.
But no, that's what they say. But you know, I think he does have, you know, that mentality of a warrior and a champion. And I think we can see Cahill taking a victory. I'll go fourth round stoppage, ground and pound. I'm going to go this time. I think he's going to take him to the deck and out muscle him on the floor.
I think that's fair.
Try and stand. I think all facets, you know, try and wear Che down like Matt Riddle did. I think he'll take a lot of what Matt Riddle tried to do, implement wrestling, good takedown. Obviously, he works a lot with Gunny as well, which is going to play a big part in this fight. So I'm looking at our second man in the UFC, and surely lots more to come from SBG in the coming months. You know, obviously Paddy Houlihan, and we're going to see guys like that progress in the coming years, or coming news months, to break, coming yeah. months. So yeah. Best of luck to Carl. Obviously moving down, further down the card, Mark, Team Rhino, Neil Seary goes up against Michael Salander. Yeah, for the inaugural Cage Warriors flyweight title. Big, big night, obviously, for the guys at SBG and Team Rhino with Neil Seary, obviously, this fight, you know, massive fight for the veteran. Three fights and the bounce. What way can you see this going? You know, Neil's such a well-rounded guy. It'd be great yeah. to see him, you know, finally, you know, top this off and get a victory for the 33-year-old vet of the cage. What do you think, Mark?
Yeah, I desperately wanted to go that way. I don't know much about Michael Salander. He's won his last fight against Wade Chiodi. I don't know much about him. I can only just know that when in doubt, give it to the vet and the guy you know.
Yeah, Siri's, you know, he's a tough guy, very well rounded. It's, you know, they've been doing a lot of work with, you know, Andy Ryan and John Kavanagh, our long, long time buddies, as we know. And they've been up with the guys in SBG, Paul Redzo Redmond, who we have on now in a couple of minutes. We'll talk to Paul in a second. You know, he's been up, and Neil Seary with the guys in SBG. And it's a real sort of, the card in general, as Paul mentions, you know, they're all sort of helping each other out. Obviously, we've Cahill on the card. We have
Chris Fields.
We're supposed to have Philip Mulpeter. We've Chris Fields. All these guys working together. I think Liam James has been doing a bit of work as well with SBG. So it's great to see all these guys egging each other on, as Reds are mentioned. And hopefully, I don't know much about Salander either. And let's just hope that that this goes in Neil's favour, because it'd be great to see. You know, he's a vet. He's been around the block. He's been all over the place. And it'd be really good to cap it off with a major a world title for Two Top.
Yeah, it's good to see. Like, it's a fun card from top to bottom. It's one of those things that Cage Warriors is. It's open about the fact that it's a
stepping stone.
It's the stepping stone promotion, but it's the top stepping stone promotion over here, and it's totally prepared to lose fighters when they become too big. That's the way they sign them. That's why they get the best quality of fighters coming up. And I don't know, I just think they've put on a fantastic card, and they've put it on for the crowd where it is. They've put it on the Helix, and there's a lot of top Irish talent coming through, and they won't grow too big, because this is the thing, that there's better fighters coming into the MMA gyms each day.
I completely agree, and obviously, you know, it's a big, big weekend as well. Obviously, we mentioned Chris Fields. We spoke to Chris 2 weeks ago. He's gone up against Vellator, Bet Norman Parise, obviously at a catchweight, as we mentioned. You can check out that interview 2 weeks ago that we did. I think it was episode 23. Flick back on the thing, you'll find it. But Mark, Chris as well, massive, massive, massive fight for Chris. Probably a guy with probably the most to lose in this situation. Obviously coming off a title loss to Jesse Taylor, who's been signed by World Series of Fighting, yeah. as we know. But this is a really big fight for Chris if he wants to solidify, you know, bouncing back, as we'll say.
Yeah,
and really being back in contention for that title.
I think Chris is going to do it this time. I think he's fixed a few things in his head that were playing on his mind the last time he went in there. And it is the thing that, like, obviously you talk to a fighter pre-fight, they're often going to say, like, this is the best fight camp ever and everything, but that's the kind of the game of poker that is we are in front of, because you can't obviously say, oh, I've got a gammy knee or whatever leading into it. But the thing is that he wasn't right in the head. He was possibly a bit down going into that Jesse Taylor fight, and might have underestimated him to a slight extent. And Jesse Taylor is a damn good fighter.
But I think that, yeah, obviously the fact with Jesse, a lot of people didn't see Jesse because he's fighting sort of he's about six belts at once, and
he's an off the wall dude. He's off the wall everywhere.
Yeah, so you know, Jesse is a really, really good fighter, and I hope it happens for Jesse as well, because you know, we want to see that talent realised, the talent we saw in The Ultimate Fighter many years ago. But Chris, yeah, I do fancy Chris in this fight. I think Chris, I was very impressed with his mental state the last time he was on. He was so he was calm but with an aggressive edge, and you know, there was that bite to him, and we didn't hear that before. We spoke to Chris three or four times in the show now, and he didn't have that nasty edge to him the previous times.
He was more passive about it.
He was more passive, yeah. Oh, you know, if it happens, it happens. But he was very much more assertive this time. And I think Chris is going to want to stand and bang. Like we saw Chris do to Pavel Kush, when Pavel Kush basically gave up because Mark Goddard stopped the fight because he couldn't breathe anymore. Yeah. And he was completely out of condition. But Chris just picked away at him, smashed him with kicks, uppercuts, that nasty uppercut that he has, and that range. And that could be, if he can keep away from this fight, I'd be worried if it went to the deck. But I think, you know, Parise is the type of guy that, you know, earlier on in his career, it seems to, you know, he went to a lot of submissions, but, you know, he had a lot of sort of knockout wins later on and a few decisions thrown in there. So if Chris can keep this stand at the feet, I'm looking at a Chris Fields victory, either by knockout stoppage in the third, I'll go, or a decision victory for Chris.
Yeah, I'm going to give it. I think Chris might have a bit of a chip in his shoulder about the fact that in the last year, because that title fight loss was a big moment for him, and it was in front of his hometown fans.
Yeah, big time.
And I think after that, then you saw Conor McGregor, the whole kind of rise of that happening after that, and going to the UFC.
Carl
going on the Late Show. And before that, Chris Fields was the standout guy, the guy who was going on RT. And I think that Chris, there's nothing better as a fighter than having a chip on your shoulder. And I think that SPG is a gym, and Irish MMA has had a chip on its shoulder for a long time, that a lot of the UK guys were getting in there,
yeah,
and there was no UFC coming to Ireland. We're definitely coming back this year, but never doing it. And I think Chris has a point to prove to the fans and to himself more than anything. And I think he doesn't like Frenchmen either, and I think he's going to finish in the second
he
round.
He doesn't like Frenchmen either. Don't speak for me in this, Moriarty.
Hey, he said it. He said it. He said, well, this is the thing, yeah. I have a couple of French
fans. Listen, I really have to say I do hope Chris wins, because Chris has been very good to us here in the show before as well, and, you know, lovely lad. And, you know, he does seem to have that bit of edge back, and I do see Chris winning this fight. I think it's going to be a great night for the Irish guys.
He's talking as if he's excited about it again.
That's what you need to be.
Yeah, exactly. And I think sometimes, maybe when he got that first title, that he chilled out and he thought he was there for a moment.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's the most dangerous thing you can do when you're a fighter.
It's the most dangerous sport in the world as well. It can bring you straight back down from any sort of illusions you may have. So it's going to be a cracking fight, I think, this one as well. I'm really looking forward to this.
Still annoyed about the Norman Parise missing weight, though. But
it's a complete cop-out. I think Chris should be awarded half his purse, and I hope he is, because this shit bothers me, because the guys, we see them, we talk to them in fight weeks, and, you know, they're cranky and pissed off, but they still give you their time, and they're still great guys.
And especially in Cage Warriors, where the money isn't that big.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You know, you should be showing your respect to your opponent. You know,
exactly.
Kind of it's very poor form.
Exactly. Mark, you know, obviously we're talking to Paul Redmond in a moment. He's next on the list on that card. Really excited about this fight, you know. He's on a serious run in the featherweight division, 4 on the bounce. We were at the fight in the Helix, Conor McGregor's night, where he pulled off that
heel lock.
We talked clearly about that, the toe hold. Remember the spinning toe against Ryan Roddy? And that would have been, you know, submission of the year worldwide, I think. It was a fantastic, fantastic submission. So I'm really looking forward to this fight against Mark Allen. And guys, we caught up with Paul Redzer Redmond earlier on, and this is what he had to say. We'll be back with the rest of the show and the week's news. Check it.
This is Bruce Buffer, your voice of the UFC Octagon. And now, we are live at Talking Balls.
Delighted to welcome back on the show Paul Redzer Redmond, who goes up against Mark Allen this Saturday night at Cage Warriors 55 in the Helix in Dublin. Paul, how are you keeping, mate? How are things? Thanks a million for joining us again on the show.
Yeah, no problem. Glad to be here.
Paul, obviously a massive fight this weekend. How are you feeling in fight week?
Yeah, really good. No injuries, no nothing. Thank God. This is probably one of the best camps I've done. It's been like a flat solid 8 weeks, because we came off the Alexi Roberts fight in April, mid-April, and I took a week off and then just straight back into it. Injury free, did a full camp with South Dublin strength condition, and just my strength has gone through the roof as well, you know, so couldn't have asked for more.
Brilliant stuff. And I believe you were down as well. We were talking to Carl Pender there a few minutes ago, and I believe you were down with the lads in SPG, yourself and Andy Ryan.
That's
from
right,
Team
yeah.
Rhino.
Well, Andy and John are really good mates. Anyway, and they obviously know, like, look, different bodies from different gyms. It's not gonna, it's obviously just gonna help everybody come along, you know. So we did
the last 4 weeks. I think we did 2 sessions a week over there, so like I think nearly 8 sessions we did over at SBG, and it's just sparred, and so we got some spars in with Connor, Cottle, Phillips, so yeah, it's been really good.
And I know Neil obviously is fighting on the card as well for the inaugural flyweight title. And
yeah, I actually can't wait for that fight now, to be honest, you know.
Yeah, that's a great card from top to bottom. Obviously, you mentioned there, you know, you've been down with the lads. So, that, you know, there's a lot of you on the fight card, probably, what, 4 or 5, and, you know, all of you going in on the card and fighting on the night. Does that sort of, you know, you sort of egg each other on and, you know, spur each other on?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, to be honest, any of the Cage Warriors have been on, I fought for them 4 times now, yeah. And all of them, me and Neil seem to be over, say, in England, Wales, and you'll always see the SBG lads there. So, like, when we were in Wales, Cottle was headlining over there, you know, John Shields. When we were in London, Cottle was fighting for the belt over there. So, you see these guys all the time, having them, it just feels like home, even when you're away, you know, so it just gives you that little bit of confidence that everybody's doing, and you're all over from the one place just to do, you know, and because it's in Ireland and it's a sellout with, as you said, all of us in the one change room, is going to be brilliant.
Paul, there seems to be a real synergy between the Irish MMA gyms at the moment, which it's different to what it's like in America. There's a chip on the shoulder of Irish MMA as it rises. Do you feel that working together, the stars are going to come to the forefront quicker?
I know Andy, I've already fought a couple of guys for the SBG crowd, you know, and I know John Donnelly fought Phil Mapira as well, so like that's been done between the two gyms, you know, so there's not really much more else to fight each other from that gym, yeah. So why not go and train with the lads? It's only going to bring you on, you know, so it has, you know, and the level of sparring is through the roof in them two gyms. You only have to look at the two coaches that's coaching with John, first black belt in Ireland, has Gunny and Connor in the UFC, Andy, yeah. Pan American champion, European champion at Jiu-Jitsu and Judo, you know, you can't beat that in any other gym, you know.
Have you noticed that in the last few months that that people are starting to take notice and legitimise MMA and know what you're doing more than they were in the past?
Oh, definitely. I think with Connor going to the UFC, it's just brought that little bit more attention. Like, I went to my girlfriend's house a couple of months ago, or just after Connor was on the Late Late Show, and she was telling me, do you know these two lads? Like, yes, I know them. I was disbarred them the other time. So if she can tell me who they are, like, obviously it's got into more social attention, you know.
And have you enjoyed? Have you noticed any change in, like, you know, yourself walking down the street, maybe? And
no,
as Mark.
No, I'm not that big yet, you know. So not yet, but not me. I just train every day. I don't really be out that much, to be honest. I don't really go out the weekends when I'm training around, you know. So I don't really see anybody, to be honest. I just train and sleep, you know.
And obviously, getting to the fight on Saturday, Paul, Mark Allen. What are you going to implement against Mark? Because you seem to be a guy who constantly evolves as a mixed martial artist since you joined the Cage Warriors promotion, especially you're on a 4-fight, you know, win streak. What are you going to implement in this fight on Saturday night?
Well, I know Andy's had a look at all the tapes and all, whatever. It's not too much that I look at, to be honest. Mm. But I have seen one or two of his videos. He's actually a really similar style to mine. He stands up, strikes and takes people down. He's a grinder. He'll stay in there for 3 rounds. So I think it's just a case of putting it on him from the start, you know.
And what's it like to be, because you're fighting in Dublin in front of your hometown fans,
sold out crowd?
Yeah, is it a bit nicer to, when cutting those final few pounds, to at least not have to travel?
No, I don't mind going to England or any of them, because it's only an hour flight. But we did a couple of years ago. A few of us out of the gym, I think it was 5 of us, we went to Chicago to fight. We all fought semi-pro, and like, which is the amateur rules. And I just remember being on like a 9-hour flight cutting weight, and it's just horrible. It's no fun at all, you know. You can't eat, can't drink, and just being at home cutting the last few kilos, everything around you, your own bed, your own, you can do the bath in your own home. Like, it just makes life a lot handier, you know.
Have you started implementing kind of better nutrition as time has gone on, and the sports science parts of the game have started to improve. Has that started to get more into your game, or were you using it back
then? Oh, definitely, yeah. And that's all down to Dave McConkey at South Dublin Strength and Conditioning. Dave's been training out with Andy, like, I think roughly about 10 years now. And I used to do horrible weight cuts, and I never actually asked him for advice. And,
yeah.
I went to him there last year, just as for my first fight in Cage Warriors. I used to do horrible cuts, like nearly 10 kilos in a week. It was just horrible on the body, and you couldn't fight at 100% in there, you know. And just since working with Dave, he's just put me on a strength program as well with doing all my other stuff with Andy down at Team Rhino. I'll travel over to Dave's twice a week in just past town there, and he just gives me diet, and then 3 weeks up to the fight, he'll tweak a couple of things, and 2 weeks out we'll tweak it even more, and then the last week then it's more or less just we have it down to a T now, you know.
Nice. Is it tricky when you're on the 4-fight win streak though not to get cozy and to still keep yourself G'd up, or is that down to the training partners who you have in the gym?
Yeah, you can't sort of take a back step. If you take your foot off the pedal for a minute, like, and think to yourself, I don't have to train here, that's crazy, because there's always somebody going to be out there walking that bit harder, that much, that's going to want it. As far as the 4-fight win streak, I don't even give that a second thought, to be honest. It's nothing, absolutely nothing, means nothing to me. Went out now on Saturday and lost. Them four fights mean people only remember if they're losses. Yeah. So it's just going out, just getting another win.
And Paul, you're a young lad as well, and you know you've a lot of time on your side. You see the guys like Connor and, you know, possibly Cole if he wins this Saturday, you know, making the transition over to the big show. Is that someone you're obviously looking at the next sort of, you know, 16 to 17 months, where we're going to be promised a card back over here, and they're going to you know have a few Irish guys in the card as well, I'm sure?
Yeah, it's just a case of of winning. Like, it took Conor 12 fights, 11 first round knockouts to get him to the UFC. And Conor's that little bit above everyone else in the European MMA, you know. That's why he's there. You just have to keep winning fights. Like, I'm only 7-3 now, so still early on, like, fight wise. But I'm sure I'll get my record, keep my record clean, and obviously they'll have a look at you, you know. I mean, I don't think I'm a boring fighter. Like, I have finished all my fights, so I don't think I'm a boring fighter, and I have pulled off a couple of tricky submissions as well. So yeah, just keep doing that, and obviously they will look at you if you keep a clean record, you know.
Definitely. How do you see things finishing up on Saturday night? Do you have a way see the fight
never,
going?
Ever do predictions or what? I just don't.
We were going into the bookies later, Paul.
Now you can't, like, people asking about the toehold on New Year's.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
It's just one of them things you cannot plan for that at all. Like, if you're in the position, you see it. I jumped on it and luckily it came off, but if you miss it, people just say, oh, you went for something flashy and you didn't get it, you know. So it's just one of them things, if you get it and you see it on the night, just go for it and put 100% into it.
Well, Paul, listen, it's been a pleasure again to talk to you, and I know you've been cutting your last few pounds, so we really, really do appreciate your time. And listen, best of luck at Cage Warriors 55 against Mark Allen on
Friday. I just want to thank Andy Ryan and Team Rhino, all the lads down there, Joseph Clifford, South Dublin Strength and Condition, O'Ban, Herder Mills, Adugo Health, and MC Nutrition. Cheers, lads.
Brilliant.
And Bad Boy Europe, sorry. Cheers.
Where can they find you on Twitter, Paul?
Yeah, at Redder MMA, or you can get me on Facebook at just Paul Redmond. I'll accept anyone.
That was Paul Redzer Redmond, who goes up against Mark Allen this Saturday at Cage Warriors 55 in the Helix. Unfortunately, guys, I don't think there's any more tickets. You can check with the Helix ticket office to see if there's any left.
Yeah,
I believe there was a few available the other day.
I think some goes to
pre-sale. Yeah, I think there's, you can check anyway. I would check, because it's a great card to get along to. And obviously, we have Redzer. What are we going to see from Redzer on Friday? Is he going to extend, or on Saturday, is he going to extend that unbeaten streak to 5 in the Cage Warriors featherweight division?
I really do think he's in with a very strong chance here. I think he's going to be spurred on. He does well in Dublin, and I think he seems to know what he's about. He's probably running now, burning off those last few pounds as we speak.
Yeah.
But I really do hope he can pull it out of the bag.
And we do appreciate that, guys, as well, because the guys are taking time out to speak to us here, and big thanks to Carl tonight and Redzer, because Redzer was actually in the gym and burning off those last few pounds.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's like, you know, the MMA community in Ireland, it's pretty tight, and the guys will usually be very, very good to us, and it's a good community. But the thing is, like, Mark Allen is one of those guys that his gym is Che Mills. Is Che Mills from his gym?
Mark, I think so. I'm not.
Can't remember. Like, I'm not entirely sure.
I'm nearly sure it is. Mills is from Trojan Fighters.
Trojan Fighters.
That's correct, and I think it is Mills' gym. So obviously they've been training with each other. I think so. We'll check that in a minute, Mark. Mark, as we mentioned there in the interview, he's a really, you know, he's evolved so much as a fighter, Redzer. And, you know, we look at his last four fights, 2 by TKO and 2 by submission. And he looks so comfortable, you know, on the deck as well. Andy Ryan, obviously a great coach at Team Rhino, you know, great ground game, along, obviously, been working with John Calvin as well, as he mentioned there, up in SBG, you know, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belts. And, you know, it's a really exciting fight. I think this guy is a really underrated fighter on the Irish scene. I really, really do. I think he's a top level fighter, and I only see good things to come for Redzer in the next year, and fingers crossed that he does get the win, because it's going to, you know, further boost the name of MMA in this country, in this city.
And this is the thing that I think for a long time that people have been able to work under the premise of no one watching. Now people are starting to take heed, and Conor and Cahill are under the media spotlight, and I think people like Redzer can really gain and win a lot of fans out of this. And
Definitely, yeah.
I think Cage Warriors is the place to do it, and I think he's pretty close to getting that, because I think the title belt is pretty much vacant at the moment, isn't it, since Conor vacated it?
That's right, yeah.
So he must be pretty close. Four wins in a row, you make that five.
Yeah,
you're asking questions.
Big time, definitely knocking on the door.
Just give it to me.
So why not give it to you? But I think anyone on this card, you know, is really, they're under spotlight, because obviously Cahill's media interest as well has grown massively in the States and all across the world.
Yeah, he was on our pre-show, that MMA Arioki
on Monday. MMA Junkie there yesterday as well.
It's
so
good little show. It's ticking along nicely.
Yeah,
it's okay.
But you know, as I mentioned there, there's going to be a lot of people worldwide watching this, obviously on MMAJunkie.com and Joe.ie over here. So it's going to, you know, anyone who's going to do well on this card, it's going to be a worldwide audience that is certainly going to be watching them, as it always is with Cage Warriors, and a great promotion. Obviously, moving on, Henry Fadipe against Mike Ling. Henry obviously coming back from Africa, Mark, when he was obviously, Henry is born in Lagos in Nigeria.
Yeah.
He fought over at EFC Africa, EFC 19 in Africa. You know, that fight was a draw against Tomelio Mapuhut. That, I think, is the net pronunciation.
Niall, you're a king of pronunciation.
But he lost that the fight before it against Fabio Ferrari. He lost that fight to Cage Gods too. And he was quite, you know, Ferrari was always in control in that match. It's been a sort of a stop-start time for the man from Ryoshin Fighting Championships. Before that, obviously, we were over at the 51 card.
Yeah, I was blown away by his performance.
Yeah, he was very good against Charlie Watts. It was a really good impression.
Real early flurry, and really got him.
We finished him, the first minute of the first round, it was?
Yeah, really impressive stuff. And that's the thing, that sometimes I think people's eyes are a bit skewed and they're not paying attention to. I actually hadn't even really, until I started looking in the books, that he had fought in between.
The thing I worry about Henry, he seems to be taking a lot of fights before he's even, you know, finished fights. He's agreed today to fight at EFC, I think it's either 22 or 3 during the summer, over in Africa. I'm not too fit. Obviously, the promotion it's on Extreme Sports, I think, show it.
Yeah, I've seen
over
it
here. We've seen it a few times.
It's on Eurosport as well.
Yeah, we saw Henry's fight the last time it was streamed live online, I think, on the YouTube channel. So he's been announced already for, you know, another fight, and he hasn't even fought against Mike Ling yet. And I don't know if that's a worrying thing, or it's not probably the most sensible thing to do.
Not everyone's Carl Pendred and has the kind of the Boston card in the UFC kind of coming up, and has the Boston
heritage.
I suppose
set your fights, make your money.
Yeah, some people are just doing it. Like, that's the thing. That's the way MMA in Ireland used to be. It was just like, you know, make a bit of money from the fights, pick and choose, and just get as many fights as you can under your belt.
Yeah.
And like, that's what I suppose he's the Donald Cerrone of Cage Warriors.
No, he definitely is. Serious talent, Fadipe, and let's just hope, you know, he can realise that talent. And I'm sure you know, if with a win on Saturday night, he will. And obviously, EFC is the biggest promotion in Africa, and I know they do get big crowds at that event. And
it's a lot of exposure. Yeah, it is
big.
True.
It's a lot of exposure, so that's probably the reason. Fighting two of the biggest promotions in the world, and let's just hope, you know, he gets a decent result and we move on from there.
How do you see it going? Because I've always thought that, like, I've only seen, like, what I've seen of him, he's good in the early stuff.
Yeah, I was disappointed that fight against Fabio Ferrari. He was dominated the whole fight, got taken to the deck, got control on the ground. But then we saw against Charlie Watts a whole different side to him. And
so it's just you don't want him up against a wrestler or a grappler.
Well, that's it. That's what I'd be worried about. And, you know, Mike Ling. What do we expect from Mike Ling? He was okay in his decision loss against Gregor Herbert, CWFC Fight Night, and I think it was in Jordan last month. It's a tough one to call. I'm going to go with Felipe because of what we know of Henry. He is a good stand-up guy, good power. And I think Mike Ling, I wasn't too impressed with him against his loss against Gregor Herb. Went to decision. I just think Henry's going to have too much for him, and he's going to try and make a statement after his last loss at Cage Gods and obviously his draw over in Africa.
Early finish, 2 minutes and round one. Stop.
Ground and pound. I'm going to go with like we saw back in December
in the Helix,
31st. Okay, Mark.
Mulpeter was cancelled against Jack. That was quite disappointing.
Yeah, it is, because obviously Philip, another outstanding talent from SBG, a top welterweight.
Did you hear what Abby Jack's injury was?
I think it was a back injury.
Back injury, that's
I think
true.
It was a back injury, yes. That's very disappointing. Philip, obviously, that we talked about this fight last time against Tommy Quinn.
Yeah.
I thought he won that fight. You know, that decision was very harsh on him back in December.
Yeah.
And before that, a battle zone fighting champs Rich Gordy. I was at that fight myself. Really, really impressive. He came back. He's one of these guys, big, big heart in him.
Yeah.
He came back from, you know, he was in a nasty, nasty rear naked choke for about 2 minutes of the fourth round and came back with a flurry of shots and showed real heart and spirit to win that fight against Rich Gordy. But disappointed to see that fight go under, I have to say. And obviously we've Stephen Collin and Liam James, the Liverpudlian Liam James. Interesting fight. You know, Liam's coming off a loss against Alan Philpott just there more recently in March at Cage Warriors 52. Let's hope. I'd like to see Liam do this. He's a good fighter, seems like a very nice lad. Gonna be an interesting one. Not too sure about Stephen Call, to be honest, Joe. I don't know too much. I've seen him in Battle Zone before.
Yeah.
Coming off two losses as well. I'm going to go with Liam James in this stand up finish. And obviously, Paul Redmond against Peter Baczynski. Paul Redmond, a great character, obviously, from coming off a great win against Chris McDonald at Cage Contender 16. The Daly card that was on Daly when Paul Daly knocked out Valley. The French guy, so looking forward to that fight as well. He's going up against Piotr Patnidzicki from Poland. I don't know how to pronounce that name. He's fought in Cage Warriors a couple of times before. I'm gonna go with Redmond on this. I hope Redzer does it. He seems like a good lad, a jumpy sort of bouncy character, and you know, he's well known on the Irish scene. Yeah, let's just go with him on this. Just be a nice way to start off the prelims on the card. So best of luck to John Redmond and Mark. Okay, moving on. We obviously can't wait for Cage Warriors. And guys, you can check that out on MMAJunkie.com and Joe.ie over here in the Republic of Ireland. So check that out and check out Carl Pendred and all the boys from SBG and Team Rhino. So I'm really looking forward to that stuff altogether. Obviously, Mark, we have to move on. We're under a bit of time pressure here tonight, guys. Because we've been talking for ages.
It's always really, when you know you've done a 40 minutes first segment, you always know you've been talking for ages.
Exactly. Mark, moving on to a bit of the news of the week. Fallon Fox, I believe, the transgender fighter, had a nice win there against Alana Jones.
Was that a nice win, really?
Since all the controversy broke. It's her first fight really being found out as a transgender fighter.
Yeah, it was pretty unimpressive, really. I think it was her her basically.
Did you watch the fight?
I've just watched it on replay. I didn't watch it live.
I haven't seen it
but
at all.
It was one of those things. She finished it by, I think it was called a chin choke, or was it
a shin choke?
Yeah, because she basically pushed her shin into your one's neck, and it seemed pretty. It was a pretty weak fight all round. It was a kind of a grinding down, and I thought it was Alana Jones was pretty. I think she came out to a song which wasn't as well as tasteful as I would have imagined.
You
with
told me this earlier.
Dude who thinks she's a lady, and it wasn't as tasteful as it would. But I think it was one of those things that Fallon Fox has been found out to be the 33-year-old person who came to mixed martial arts late, and I think everyone's a bit excited. But I think if she comes up against anyone who's really good at one thing, she'll be beaten the crap out of. Like, you know, the UFC is not going to be knocking on her door anytime soon on the basis of that.
Yeah, I don't think she'll ever be a UFC fighter. Yeah,
people just like all the Reza Madadi. A bit of a case of handbags at 10 paces, you might say.
Definitely, yeah. Reza Madadi got himself in a bit of trouble. His lawyers haven't commented on the story. They've denied the story at the moment.
150,000 euros worth of...
Apparently in his native Sweden, yeah. He was chased handbags by police in a car with 150,000 pounds worth of designer gear. This is a UFC fighter, guys.
Of handbags, let's be clear.
Fighting in front of 18,000 people just... 2 months ago, and it looks as though he could be in a lot of trouble with the police. We're not going to speculate or make any more comments on it, but it does look to be a pretty serious allegation. It could be serving a little bit of time, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. So keep your eyes on that.
It was worth it just for the handbags of 10 paces line.
That's it, yeah. big time. Good man. Obviously, we learned last night some devastating news for Alpha Kat Zingano. Oh. She's been ruled out of the Ultimate Fighter. What is it, 18 season, obviously, due to a severe knee injury. I believe she ripped her ACL, and she got operated on straight away. And there was actually a very funny tweet last night. Well, not funny, it's quite unfortunate. Tom Lawler obviously blew his knee out in Sweden. And he basically sent Dana White, "Oh, do you know any good knee surgeons? I'm still waiting to see one." After blowing his knee out, so they obviously got Kat looked after straight away. Interesting stuff. We leave that for you to make your mind up.
Well,
on that.
I think Brian Caraway is a gun for hire. took her out pretty easily with that what was it? A shoulder bump or was
elbow?
It?
Apparently,
elbow.
That's what Kat explains. Obviously, that had nothing to do with it.
But it was slow burn on the knee.
I'm a little bit disappointed because I was liking Kat Zingano fighting Rondi, because I think she would have really given her a lot of problems. There was such an impressive performance against Misha Tate. Obviously Misha and Ronda, it's going to sell a lot better because they hate each other so much. We've mentioned the UFC would have been like secretly a little bit happy probably that this
secretly
happened.
Secretly Mihal, yeah, absolutely delighted.
So it really is, these two girls genuinely have like distaste for each other. You can check out that interview
with
it goes
Misha.
Unnoticed with Misha. Like she mentioned the Ultimate Fighter, that was with us.
Yeah.
She mentioned that was her ultimate dream in the next sort of 7 to 8 months to you know, have a women's Ultimate Fighter. Now that's a reality. It's crazy.
Bizarre.
We'll try and get Misha on again. I'll get in contact, see if we can get a word with her in the coming weeks as well.
It's kind of unfortunate because I did think it was a real... It paid heedens to the true sports aspect of it, because Kat Zingano is an actual trainer.
Yeah,
she runs the gym. She runs a gym with her husband.
Yeah, Maurizio Zingano. He's a BJJ practitioner. He's one of the best.
Exactly. And she actually teaches every day, and that's what she does. And it would have been nice to have, because like obviously Ronda, amazing fighter, and the first ever mum to step in the octagon.
There we go. It's John Anik nicely pointed.
People thought about Big Country, but no.
You know, we love the women's mixed martial arts in this show, and it is it's just a bit of a bummer really that it didn't happen for her, because she does seem like a genuinely nice person as well. But we can look forward to it. You know, I'm sure this season's going to be very interesting with the two of them on board as well.
Do you worry now that it could go a bit e-entertainment now and get a bit handbags at 10 paces between
definitely
this is what Dana wants, I suppose. He wants a kind of a real controversial
show. Make the coach asleep in the house with the rest of the fighters now. That'll just top it all off.
They'll bring Brian Caraway. I saw someone saying that they'll bring Brian Caraway and Pat Healy into the house as co-coaches and have
alright. Just while we mention something there, obviously Michael Bisping was being slated yesterday by Luke Rockhold on Twitter. Rockhold sort of calling him out on Twitter. just going, I want to fight you, I want to fight you, etc. Why don't you fight me? And Bisping replied, why don't you go fucking beat someone in the UFC first and then I'll fight you. You know, I want to beat Vito again.
Wouldn't be a show without Nihilus Bisping.
Vito. Vito. Hey, I played a Vito tonight. Whatever. Okay, right. But Mark, do you like that fight? No. Is Bisping right? I think so.
Here, look.
It makes no sense for Bisping to fight.
And it's a Styles. Rockhold. It's a Styles pain in the arse fight, because the thing is that Luke Rockhold's just a bit of a younger version of Bisping as well. But Bisping is kind of a more experienced version of Rockhold. Yeah. They both fight a similar style. They both haven't got that much power in their punching. And
but it just makes no sense for Bisping. He's not going to fight him. Yeah. I think it's as simple as that. That's where it goes.
Obviously this week as well, we had the campaign to save Olympic wrestling.
Yes.
Has taken another twist, where yesterday, which was Tuesday, the Olympic Wrestling Committee, the committee basically tried to present to a panel of the
Russia,
IOC in Moscow in Russia, and them, I think
St. Petersburg,
sorry. And I think there's wushu, baseball / softball, and a couple of other sports. And I think everyone knew that basically they had to pick three or four sports which would go forward to a secret bout by the IOC panel.
Ballot.
Sorry. Secret, did I say bout? That would be actually the IOC panel having a secret fight. That would be weird, wouldn't it? But the question still remains, will they overturn a decision they just made in February? It's looking highly unlikely, but at least the Wrestling Federation, they've made some of the changes that they wanted to make. To make it more applicable and sellable as a sport.
And hashtag the shit out, save Olympic wrestling. Damn on Twitter.
Right.
Get that, keep that campaign going, guys. Yeah. And follow the Olympic International Olympic Committee and slate them with, you know, save Olympic wrestling tweets. And speaking of Twitter, you can catch us on Twitter at Talking Brawls. He's at Mark Moriarty 101.
He's Noel McGrath 4.
And you can catch us on Facebook at Talking Brawls Mixed Martial Arts Podcast, and obviously on Gmail, talkingbrawls@gmail.com. Okay, just a couple of more things before we wrap up this week's show, Mark. Obviously, as well, we learnt just breaking earlier on that Eddie Wineland is officially out of UFC 161, and a rebooking with Barao is not guaranteed for Eddie Wineland. How unfair is that, Mark? And you know, what happened? This division is
insane.
This division is really bothering me. I think a decision has to be made about Dominic Cruz. It's in a lot of limbo. Surely the right fight to make would have been Faber against Wineland, no?
Yeah, it's a fair enough thing to say. The division's messed up for me. I don't even know what's going on week to week now. Pretty much two interim champions. Like, you know, we could move on from that. Like, Dominic Cruz is pretty. Dominic Cruz is pretty much settled into that seat as a Fox analyst now.
Well, I'd never like to say this, but I think a time has come where something needs to be done about the title, the destination of the title, whether he's going to be able to fight. It's been 2 years now, and it's come on, like, you know, Dana, make a decision. We really, really need to know. It's not fair to the other guys in the division. I think he's been given long enough. It's, you know, no fight's been announced, so I think we just have to make a decision. I don't like to see anyone get stripped of a title, but that's the way it looks to be going, Mark.
Sure. When do you think we could possibly have a Dominic Cruz Henin Barao fight? Like, that's
it's 6-7 months away at least.
And like, I'd say Uriah Faber will be retired by the time he gets that fight with Dominic Cruz. You know, kind of a it's all a bit depressing.
Exactly,
really.
Crazy stuff. Obviously, Clay Guida and Chad Mendes is booked for UFC 164 in Milwaukee. Which is, you know, a really good fight as well. Also on paper, a top featherweight clash. Also in the news, Isaac Valley Flag was scratched from UFC one bout with Sam Stout due to a back injury. Also, we mentioned earlier on Josh Thompson, Donald Cerrone. Love to see that fight. Mark.
Cage Warriors 55. Yeah. I'll be there.
You'll be there.
Recording a few interviews and bits
awesome
and pieces
stuff
for a special. You'll be at a wedding.
I'll be at a wedding, yes.
Drinking the place dry.
I will indeed.
People get married, dude. This is what happens.
Yeah, two very good friends of mine. Best of luck to them, and they know who they are. So it's really looking forward to it. Mark's going to be there, guys, at Cage Warriors. You can catch that, obviously, on MMAJunkie.com if you're a non Irish listener, and obviously in Ireland you can catch that on joe.ie, and catch them at Cage Warriors. And obviously, guys, we we'd like to really thank the guys again for coming on today. It's been a tough week, you know. Wage cut, not a wage cut.
Do you have a wage cut?
Jeez, we're rumbling shit all over the place today. A wage cut. So really big thanks to Carl Pendred and Paul Redzerevin for coming on, and hit those guys up on Twitter. And guys, we can't wait for this fight on Saturday, especially obviously Pendred and Mills. It's going to be an absolute barn burner. So guys, we'll be back next week with more explosive interviews and heart-thumping analysis. From Mark Moriarty and myself, Niall McGrath, good luck and good night.